So beginning a new topic in Ribbis, and that's the issue, is once one has already violated the Yisra Ribbis, hopefully I'll learn the shiur for the last 2 months, one didn't violate Ribbis. But assuming that one violated the Yisra of Ribbis, now what happens? What are the consequences of violating Ribbis? The basic question is one required to return the Ribbis or not? And is it in fact enforceable in Beis Din? So the Gemara in the beginning of the fifth parak of Metziah quotes a machlekes on the Rahim, where the ribis ktsutza is yotze b'dayonim, or where the ribis ktsutza is ena yotze b'dayonim. So we've used the term ribis ktsutza pretty much synonymous with ribis that's deraisa ktsutza. The term ktsutza means that it's a set amount, that I'm lending you $100 to receive $120, or I'm lending you $100 to be paid back at the 5% interest. Whatever the case may be, there was a set amount of interest that was built into the very agreement. That's what's called ribis ktsutza. We spoke the arichos about the machlekes, the Ram and the Ravid. The Ram says the agreement has to be literally at the time of the loan, and the Ravid says the ketzitza can be put in even at the time of the returning of the loan, but those are already details. But assuming that we have ribbis ketzitza, we have ribbis, which is a real ribbis deraisa, so maybe we'll just move it over a little. Russell, maybe we can just move this. I think that we're just too far. The sun. Maybe it's a little bit better. The Ov of ketzitza, shemesh v'gurasa, doesn't mean the sun has to be. So the Gemara has a machlokes, Amarayim, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, whether we have a case of Ribbis Ketzutza, is it Yotze B'dayonim or is it Eina Yotze B'dayonim? Namely, is it enforceable in Beis Din? Can Beis Din force the person to return the amount of money that he collected B'Isser? So Rabbi Yochanan says that Ribbis Ketzutza is Eina Yotze B'dayonim, and Rabbi Elazar says Ribbis Ketzutza is Yotze B'dayonim. And the Gemara says, what's the machlokes? Where does it come from? So the Gemara quotes a posuk to support Rabbi Elazar. Pasuk says, "Al tikach meito neshach v'sarbis." Pasuk in Parshas Behar. A couple weeks from now, the Torah says, "Don't take ribbis v'cheyach yichal imach." But rather, you should support your brother. You should help your brother out. Give him a free loan. V'cheyach yichal imach. So Rabbi Elazar interprets this pasuk v'cheyach yichal imach in an additional level. Not only is the Torah telling us to refrain from taking ribbis in the first place, but v'cheyach yichal imach means make sure to help your brother out. And if you took the ribbis, return the ribbis to him, because otherwise he won't be able to survive. He's not going to have any money. So even if you collected $100,000 in ribbis from the Isser, so go ahead and give him back the ribbis to fulfill the mitzvah v'cheyach yichal imach. And Rabbi Yochanan interprets v'cheyach yichal imach in a different way, quoting as a different mach or a different halacha. So the machlekes Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar revolves around this pasuk in Chumash, whether there's a mitzvah b'fnei atzmo v'cheyach yichal imach to actually return the ribbis or not. So the Achrona point out that this machlekes seems to be a very, very strange machlekes. The whole sugi is a very, very strange machlekes. We know that if I steal something from somebody, so I have to return it. If I cheat you in business, if I have money of yours that doesn't belong to me, so of course I have to return it. What's the shaila? Ganav has to return it. Gazan has to return it. Oh no, you have to return. Of course you have to return something. You don't need a posik to tell me that you have to return ribbis. Isn't it obvious? The Torah said you're not allowed to take it, so it's understood. You're a ganav. You're a gazan. You're not entitled to the money. So mameli, you're not allowed to take it. Mameli, you have to return it. So why does Rabbi Yochanan say that Yitaka don't have to return ribbis, even though you took it to Isser? And even Rabbi Elazar, who says that you have to return ribbis, he has that dray with a pasuk, with a drush, a whole chiddush HaTorah, that you have to return it. Typically, it's obvious you have to return it. If it's not your money, if you weren't entitled to it, so it's not your money, of course you have to return it.
It's also an affair on the one who paid it.
That's true.
Maybe
that's
No,
but the issue is whether I have to return it back to the lova or whether I can keep it myself. So in the end of the day, no, tzedakah doesn't make the money on it. Beis Din doesn't make the money on it. So it's just a question of whether I have to return that money, even though it's true the malva and the lova both violated the yisur, but whether or not I have to return it, that's the source of the machlokes. So come the achronim and develop a yisur based on this gemara, that ribbis is fundamentally different than gneiva and gazela and cheating, all other kinds of business-related yisurim, for a very simple reason. That ribbis, the money is given, midas, mirazon. The lova signed the agreement. The lova said he's going to pay 8% ribbis. The lova said he's going to give you an extra $10,000 at the end of the deal. So the lova agreed, b'leif shalom. He may not have been thrilled about it, but he knew that this is the only way for him to get the loan, so he agreed that he's going to pay the ribbis. So he did an aveira, so that's true. Ribbis is an aveira, but it's a different type of an avera. It's not a chosher mishpa type of an avera. It's not an avla of dinim mamunis. It's not that I cheated the guy out of something. It's not that I stole it. It's not that I ripped the person off. If I'm a ganav or a gazlan, oh no, things of that nature, so then it's not my money. So of course I have to return it. What's the shaila? But ribbis, since the person gave it to me beratzon, so the money, it's technically my money. I'm the owner on this ribbis. Some rishonim even go so far as to say there's a sugi in the beginning of Masechet Kedushin. There's a ritva that comments in Kiddushin, let's say I enter into a ripas deal with somebody. I say to them, I'm going to lend you $10,000 on the condition that you return me $10,000 plus a ring. The ring should be ribas. The guy returns me the ring, and I go ahead and take that ring and makadosh anisha with that ring. So the Ritva says the Kiddushin is chal, even though normally the halacha is that if I'm makadosh anisha with gezela, if I steal something, I break into a jewelry store, and I steal a ring and then use that ring to be makadosh anisha, so the Kiddushin is invalid. That's what we ask the chassid under the chuppah. We don't ask him in such a straightforward way, did you rob or did you break into a jewelry store? We ask him, is this ring yours? Did you buy it with your own money? Is it totally yours? Because I'm a Kaddish Begezel and a Mekudeshes. So the Ritva writes in Kedushin and above that Mekaddish Begezel and a Mekudeshes, the Mekaddish Beribis is Mekudeshes, because the money belongs to you, because the other person agreed to this deal. That's in fact why the post can point out that the Shulchan Aruch put Uchaz Ribbis in a very strange place. He didn't put it into Chayshim Mishpat, he put it into Yeridaya. And the reason is because Ribbis is not really a violation of Chayshim Mishpat. People think it's Chayshim Mishpat because it has to do with money, but it's not really Chayshim Mishpat. Chayshim Mishpat are means if I damage you, if I steal something from you, if I cheat you in business, those are violations of Chayshim Mishpat. Ribbis is not a violation of Chayshim Mishpat because the other person agreed. It's a terrible Isser, it's an Isser Deraisa, Kam Vakam Isurim, but those are Isurim and Adam Lamopam in a sense, rather than Adam Lachabe. And therefore it belongs more in the realm of Yeridaya. So that's the Yisod, that's why the Amoraim are arguing whether I have to return the ribbis or not. So Rabbi Yochanan says, I don't have to return the ribbis. I did an Avera. It's like I ate Chazir, so I ate Chazir. Okay, I did Chazir. I'm Chazir B'tshuva, but I don't have, there's nothing to return. So I took ribbis be Yisur, but I don't have to return it to you. You gave it to me, Midas. So what do I have to return it to you for? And Rabbi Elazar says, you're right, Rabbi Yochanan, that in theory you don't have to return it. Chayshim Mishpat doesn't require you to return it, but there's an additional mitzvah satorah that Rabbi Elazar dash into a pasuk, there's a mitzvah satorah to return the ribbis, not because I quote unquote owe you the ribbis, but to return the ribbis because I'm supposed to fulfill the mitzvah, helping out my brother, and is mechayev me to return the ribbis. So based on this yesod, that the returning of the ribbis is not based on chayshim mishpat, but it's based on the special mitzvah of v'chayach l'chayimach, now we can begin to understand the Gemara at the beginning of the ninth parak of Bava Kamma. We've learned Daf Yomi recently. So the Gemara draws a distinction between the person himself who took the ribbis in contrast to his yorshim. Let's say if Reuven violates the issue of ribbis, he takes a ribbis from somebody, and then Reuven dies. So now the children of Reuven have all this money that is accumulated based on ribbis of the father. Are they obligated to return this ribbis or not? So the Gemara draws a distinction between gezela in contrast to ribbis. If Reuven was a gazlan or a ganav, he cheated people in business, or he broke into banks, and he's got money, he's accumulated money that really wasn't his in terms of chayshim mishpat. So of course the children have to return it. What's the shaila? How can they take the money? It's not their money. So of course they have to return it to the victims. But if Reuven was a very honest person, he was just a valveir, he just took ribbis, so then he has the mitzvah of b'cheach yichaymach. The mitzvah of b'cheach yichaymach was given to the malva b'ribbis himself, not to the yorshim. So l'didei azar rachamana, l'brei lo azar rachamana, that this child, the yoresh, doesn't have to return the money of ribbis, because the father technically is the rightful owner to this money, he's just mechuyev in the mitzvah, but the son doesn't inherit this mitzvah of achzoras haribbis. The only exception to this rule, the Gemara tells us, is that let's say the father collected something of ribbis, and it wasn't just cash that he collected. He collected a car of ribbis. So he lent somebody $100,000, and the guy returned him $100,000 in a car. So now the father's driving around this car, and everybody knows it has a license plate ribbis on it. Everybody knows this is the car that this guy collected ribbis. And then the father dies. So now the son's still driving around with this license plate of ribbis on it. So the Gemara says, in Yechlehem, Avi and Paro Talis, if the father collected a cow or collected a garment, a talis, beribbis, and everybody knows this is ribbis, and everybody says, whenever they see the son walking around with this cow, walking around driving this car, so everybody says, everyone's behind the back, I'm saying, you remember that father? He was the ribbis taker. He was the guy who was lend money beribbis to everybody, and look at his son, he's walking around still with the ribbis. So the Gemara says that would be a violation of kibud avaim. So the child is mechuyev to return the ribbis to protect the covet of his father. Min haTorah, he doesn't have to return it in terms of mamonos, because it was rightfully the malva's money. Because the lover gave to midas, in terms of the mitzvah achzaras haribbis, he also doesn't have to return it because b'cheach yichaymach only applies to the person himself. But mishum kovet aviv, he's mechuyev to return the ribbis. So it's in that gemara that the gemara has a fascinating discussion, which is very, very relevant l'maisa. The gemara asks the question: what kind of kibud avaim is that? You're mechuyev to do kibud avaim for the father who collected money b'ribbis. The gemara says the father was a rasha, he was a manuvel, he was a violation of the isurim of ribbis yom v'layla. What do you have to do kibud avaim according to such a person, the person is Eina Oysa Maisa Amcha, the Gemara quotes a pasuk there. You only have to do Kibra V'Aim for someone who's an Oysa Maisa Amcha, someone who's basically Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. So the Gemara says, Hochma Mayaskina, that the father did tshuva. So the Gemara says, wait a second, if he did tshuva, so what's he still driving around the car? So the Gemara says, he did tshuva, and he was about to return the car, and then he died right before he returned the car. Hochma Mayaskina. So it's that Gemara that became a major machlekes in Rambam and the Tour. What conclusion can we draw from that Gemara vis-a-vis the mitzvah of Kibra V'Aim? So some Rishonim drew the conclusion from that Gemara. The Torah drew the conclusion from that Gemara is that there's no mitzvah of Kibra V'Aim for a father who's a Rasha. If the father is labeled up Yaloch as a Rasha, again, we are very, very hesitant to apply that that term, Bizman Hazeh. But if a person meets that halachic criteria of a Rasha, so then there's no mitzvah of Kibra V'Aim on them. And the Rambam says no. The Rambam says there is no such halacha. The Rambam says that there's a mitzvah derais of Kibra V'Aim, even to a parent who's an absolute Rasha. So what does the Rambam do with that Gemara? So there's a lot of tirus on that. So we're not learning Kibra V'Aim, we're not learning Ribbis right now. But suffice it to say, it's that Gemara in the beginning of Agoz Leitzim about the father being a Rasha and returning the Ribbis, not returning the Ribbis. It's that Gemara that became the source of a heated controversy in terms of Ilchus Kibra V'Aim. I mean, would you be mechuyev to return the ribbis to a mumin? According to some Rishonim, you're allowed to take ribbis from a mumin. We spoke about this in the past. But what I'm meaning is that we don't take ribbis from a mumin, a real bona fide mumin. That's a real mamash, a real mumin. So some say that even according to those who say that you're not allowed to take ribbis from a mumar, they hold that the isra of ribbis applies even when the chaychaymach doesn't apply. But lechara, they would agree that you're not mechuyev to return the money to the ribbis, to return the money to the mumar, because the mitzvah of chaychaymach wouldn't apply to a mumar. Again, whether that really applies was manazeh is highly controversial, as we spoke about in the past. But in theory, in the good old days when you had real good mumarim, so then maybe you would have that discussion about whether there would be a mitzvah of ribbis to a mumar. Anyway, so getting back to the story, so the gemara basically tells us drive some of this yisod. That returning ribbis is according to Rabbi Elazar is a mitzvah in a Torah, but it's not b'Torah's dinei mamonos, and therefore you can have situations where it doesn't apply altogether, such as in the case of the father who took ribbis and now the son is yorish the property, because technically speaking, the money in terms of dinei mamonos belongs to him. How do we pass the halach in this machlokes Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan? So we pass like Rabbi Elazar. We pass the beferish v'hilchasa that ribbis ketzutzas yaitzim b'dayanim. So we pass that the beizin will be kaif on this. The beizin will force you to perform the mitzvah of achzaras ribbis. There's a question in the Rishonim, just how far will Beis Din go to force this? Does that mean that they'll bring you to Beis Din and give you a real big pep talk, a big musa shmuz, and they'll actually kaifen all the mitzvahs, the mamish, even perhaps apply force to get the money back from you? Or will Beis Din actually go to your property and go take the car back themselves, or go take the money out of your account themselves? So that's a question, just how far we go in terms of that. How far does Ribbis Ketzutza Yotze B'Dayanim go? But Lamaisa, that's the din. Lamaisa, the din is that Ribbis Ketzutza is Yotze B'Dayanim, the person is Mechuyav Min HaTorah to return any ribbis that he took, provided that it was ribbis d'arais, ribbis d'rabbanan. We'll see in a moment. There is a question that the Rishonim raised in the following. Let's say you have a situation where a person collected money by ribbis b'yasar, and now he's ready to do tshuva, and he comes, brings the $5,000 back to the lova, and he's about to return it to him, and the lova says, you know what, I'm moichel on the money, don't worry about it, you don't have to give the money back, it's okay, I'm moichel. So does that mechila work or not? So the Rambam draws the following distinction. The Rambam says that mechila works on this mitzvah of hachzoras haribbis, same as it works in any other chiv. If I'm supposed to give you money, the Torah says to me to give you money, and you're moichel on it. So good, so finished. So I don't have to give you the money anymore. But the Rambam says a person shouldn't make the following mistake. A person shouldn't think, if I'm telling you this chiddush, that mechila works on ribbis, so maybe you're going to tell me that mechila works on the etzem ribbis also, on the very taking of the ribbis. So the Rambam says, an interesting nukula, nukhas ribbis. I come to you and I say, I'd like to borrow $10,000 from you, and you say to me, I'm only going to lend it to you $10,000 if you give me an extra $1,000. So I say, okay, fine, I agree to give you the extra $1,000, I'm moichel on the ribbis. So the Rambam says, that's absurd. Mechila doesn't work to be moichel on ribbis before it was taken. Says the Rambam, the Torah says even the lova is not allowed to give the ribbis. So every ribbis is mechila. If the lova agrees to the deal, so then why are we spending a whole year learning those ribbis? We can get around all your credit card shows, everyone will be moichel. So the Rambam says, that's absurd. Because you give me moichel the yisr of ribbis, because as we said before, ribbis is not chesh mishpat. Chesh mishpat we can be moichel. So if I say to you something chesh mishpat, I'm giving you permission to cheat me. Cheat me, charge me, overcharge me, do it. I can do whatever I want. If I agree and you agree, so two people can enter into whatever business agreement they want to. But ribbis is not a business agreement. Ribbis is an issur of yeradeya, so I can't be moichel on the Rabban Shalom's mitzvah. So to be moichel on the etzema ribbis, that's out of the question, says the Rambam. That which the Rambam is telling me, that I can be moichel on ribbis, that means I can be moichel on hachzoras ribbis. The issur is already done. The issur is over. We violated the issur of ribbis. Okay, good, finish. We did the issur. I did the issur. You did it. Everyone did the issur. And now we're trying to patch things up later. So we're trying to say, what should I do? So then the halacha is you can be moichel. You can be moichel on achzoras ribbis. We had a shaila recently about achzoras ribbis. That was a complicated shaila that somebody ended up in violation inadvertently of ribbis. And now the question is, you have to go and give all the money back. So we have to offer to give all the money back. And the other guy can be moichel. The other guy wants to be moichel. He can be moichel. If he doesn't want to be moichel, then you got to talk about make a cheshbon, figure out exactly how much money you really owe him. It's based on this halacha that the Rambam paskins, that we paskin Shulchan Aruch, that a person can be moichel on hachzoras haribis, that the Taz has an interesting chiddush. The Taz says that ribis ketzutza yotze b'dayara means, if the guy takes me to a din Torah, if the lover decides to take me to court, to demand his money back, so then I have a mitzvah to return the money to him. Let's say the guy never takes me to a din Torah. Let's say the guy is lazy, whatever. He knows that I borrowed money, I lent the money for ribis, and he knows that in theory I should give him back $10,000 right now, but he never bothers me to come to collect the money from me. So the Taz says, it's not my problem, it's not my achrayus. So the Taz said, this is radically different from other areas of halacha. Let's say if I stole something from you, and I know that I owe you the money. So whether you are taking me to a din Torah or not, who comes Erev Yom Kippur, I want to be chos b'tshuva, it's my responsibility to give the money back. I know I cheated you. I know I overcharged you for something. So I took money from you shelo kedin, so it's my problem. So whether you know about it or don't know about it, I have to run after you. Forget the Mishnah says that tzarech lecha afil l'madai, the Mishnah says in the end of Bava Kama. If I stole something from you, and now you're not in town, it's my achrayus. I got to get v'heshus akzela shagozol. So the Taz says that halacha doesn't apply to ribbis. But I'm not mechuyav to run after you. If and when you come to me and you bring me to a din Torah, so then okay, then Nebuch I'll fulfill the mitzvah of achzoras haribis. But Kozman, that you haven't approached me, I'm not mechuyav to run after you. Why is that? So the Taz seems to understand. It's like Eil des Mechila a little bit. It means since the halacha of returning the ribis is so fundamentally different than the halacha of returning gezela, is that basically the money is mine. You want me to fulfill the mitzvah of Heshmas of achzoras haribis, so go do something about it. Kozman, you haven't done anything about it, so it's Keilu Yuam Michael. So most of the poskim didn't accept the Taz. Most of the poskim say that true, the mitzvah is different. It's not exactly the same as Beheshmas Akzela, because the money technically belongs to the Malveh, but it's a mitzvah. It's still a mitzvah. So the same way, it's my responsibility to go find a pair of tefillin to put in every morning. It's my responsibility to go build a sukkah. I have to go buy a lulav. So I have to go do whatever I can to fulfill this mitzvah. The fact that you're lazy and you're not taking me to a din Torah, that doesn't excuse me. So I have to take the initiative and go after you and say, I want to fulfill my mitzvah. If you choose to be meichel that mitzvah, and you say, listen, don't do me any favors, don't return me the ribbis, we'll just part friends, that's okay. That's what the Rambam says. You can be meichel and achzoras haribis, but I can't just sit back and be lazy and say, that's not my problem. Kozman, you don't bother me, I don't have to run after you. I have a mitzvah min haTorah to return the ribbis. That's, I think, most of the posts can assume against this Taz.
What about in the case of Gemara about where you let somebody use your house? You gave the example of the car, but something which is harder to value. In other words, I let somebody, the house, I don't even rent it out, but I let somebody use my house.
Right, so those kinds of things, depending on whether they're actual ribis derais or not. So some of those things are ribis ketutza, and some of them are avak ribis. Depending, we touched on this a little bit as we went along during the last few weeks, that if the case in hand meets all the criteria of ribis ketutza, so then we would have to actually evaluate how much that benefit is worth, and that's called the amount of ribis. So let's say, for argument's sake, in the case of the house, if I lend you $1,000, and in return, you give me back $1,000, and you let me live in the house for a month, so at least according to many Rishonim, whether living in a house is that actually considered to be ribis ketzutza or not? So Rabbi Natam says that giving me the privilege to live in a house may not be ribis ketzutza, because ribis ketzutza means that we're setting up a deal that for certain I'm going to end up with more money. I'm giving you $1,000, I'm going to end up with $1,000 and $500. Whereas when you give me the right to live in the house, so maybe the house will fall down. Maybe I'll never get to live in that house in the first place. So Rabbi Natan threw the question, is that real bona fide ribis ketzutza? Maybe it's only avak ribis. And other Rishonim, Rashi, and others say, no, that's called ribis ketzutza. That means, what, the house is going to fall down? The odds are the house is not going to fall down. So that's called ribis ketzutza. That's a technical machlokes in Ezer Neshech about the case of the house. So according to those Rishonim, will say that living in the house is called ribis ketzutza. So then you would have to figure out what's the fair market value of a month's rent. So I don't know, this particular house is $2,000 a month for rent. So then, in effect, what I took from you was $2,000, so I would have to return to you $2,000. You know what I mean? That's exactly what the mitzvah of Sarasa Ribbis would be. So the Gemara draws a distinction between Ribbis Ketzutza in contrast to Avak Ribbis. If something is only Ribbis Mitterabonon, so then true, it was an Aveira to take it, but Ribbis Ketzutza Yotze B'dayonim, Avak Ribbis Eina Yotze B'dayonim. That's a Mepharish in the Gemara beginning of Ezer Neshech. That those are learning study by Metzia, I think tomorrow, but Metzia starts, so in about 60 days or so, everyone will be into the hot topics of Ribbis. So the Gemara says that Avak Ribbis is Eina Yaitze B'dayonim, that you can't force somebody to return Ribbis that was only a Ribbis D'Rabbanan. So this is a Machlekes that we showed him. When we say that Avak Ribbis Eina Yaitze B'dayonim, does that mean that I'm totally potter? That means, yeah, sorry, I can laugh at you, you know, you can't take me to a dintera, so tough luck, and therefore I can keep the money lechatchila. What do we say? No, Avak Ribbis Eina Yaitze B'dayonim, that means the Beis Din can't enforce it, but if the guy wants to know what the right thing to do is, you better believe he's supposed to return the money. What the Gemara calls, in different contexts, the Gemara has in the sixth parak of Bava Kamma a whole discussion about sometimes you have dinim mamonis that's enforceable in Beis Din, and sometimes you have dinim mamonis that's not enforceable in Beis Din, but it's enforceable in dinim shemayim. So chayv letzeisa de shemayim. So the Rishonim have a machlekes. What's the story of Avak Ribbis? When the Gemara says that Avak Ribbis is ena yetz b'dayonim, so that means that's it, finished. I don't have any achrayis whatsoever. It's totally my money and tough luck. I don't have to return it even in terms of dinim shemayim. Well, do we say no? That true with Beis Din, I don't have to return it, but in Dina Shemayim I do have to return it. So we pask in the second one. We pask in that if a person took Avak Ribbis, so then he really is supposed to return the money. Again, unless the other person was Michael. The other guy's Michael is Michael. But if a person took even Ribbis D'Rabbanan, he is really lechatchila supposed to return the money to fulfill the mitzvah of returning the Ribbis. There is a machlokes in the Rishonim. Whenever you have a situation that a person is chayv, let's say, sidei shemayim. So for argument's sake, not just this case, but a lot of cases like this, where potter bin dini yodim v'chayv bin dini shemayim. So the person who wants to collect the money, so he comes and he takes me to a din Torah, so the Beis Din says, sorry, our hands are tied, I can't do anything about it, we can't enforce it, it's potter bin dini yodim. So the guy goes ahead and doesn't do too much, he goes and his toe face the money, he goes and he grabs the money himself. So does that work or not? So that's a machlekes of Rishonim. So Rashi in one place writes yes, another place Rashi doesn't write that way. The Rashi in Bava Metzia writes that whenever a person is chayiv, let's say sidei shemayim, so tfisa works. So the Baal Din, the person who claims that he has a claim, but it's not enforceable in Beis Din, that means it's not enforceable in Beis Din Shemata, but it is enforceable in Beis Din Shel Mala. So being enforceable in Beis Din Shemala gives the person the right to be toifes, and once he's toifes, then Beis Din won't take the money away from him. So that will, if that machlekes in Rishon, the Chayiv will express itself here also. In a situation of Avak Ribbis, so I come to the guy, I take him to the intern, I say, listen, I lent you, you know, I borrowed money by Ribbis from you, it was a Ribbis D'Rabbanan, it was with credit cards, with mices, whatever kunsum was, it was a Ribbis D'Rabbanan, and now I demand the $10,000 back. So the guy says, go jump in the lake, I'm not going to return $10,000 to you. Avak Ribbis is any else, but the Yadam, go take me to court, you're going to lose. So the guy says, okay, so he knocks me down to the floor and he grabs my wallet. So he takes $10,000 away from me. So according to some Rishonim, he's allowed to keep that money. Because since in Beis Din Shemala, I'm not saying he should have done it that way. Maybe he should have done it a little bit more, a little more finesse. But once he's toe-faced the money, so then technically speaking, he's allowed to keep that money according to one day in Rashi. Again, beyond the scope right now, there's a ketzos that has a whole lumdusha discussion about that. Did Rashi really mean it? Did he say it all the time? He's only said it sometimes. There's a lot of lumdus about this. They talk about this. I think we gave a shiur about this last year about the question about kimle b'drahmine. The halacha is that if I burn down your house on Shabbos, so the Mishnah says in Ksubis, in Bava Kamma, that the person who burns down the house on Shabbos is Chayav Misa for Chilul Shabbos, and he doesn't technically have to pay the money, because Kim Levi Dramine, whenever you do one Aveira that carries with it a more serious punishment, a lesser punishment, so we give you the more serious one, we let you get off on the Mamonis, you don't have to pay. So Rashi and Tosis write that even though you don't have to pay in Beis Din Shel Mata, but in Beis Din Shemala you do have to pay. So Bola Tzei Shemayim, Yitzei Tzei Shemayim, you're supposed to pay. So that's what Rashi, it's in that sugi that Rashi writes, and therefore, if the person whose house was burned down is toe-faced the money, as they're taking me to the Beis Haskila, he goes ahead and he's toe-faced the money that's coming to him, so Rashi writes that Tfisa will work. that since I'm chayim and dinishimayim, so the tefisa will work. So the mefarshim talk about the shaila about yitzias mitzrayim. Right? We get this last year, right? That at the time of yitzias mitzrayim, so the mitzrayim were chayiv a lot of punishments. They were don anochi. So Kadosh Baruch Hu punished the mitzrayim. Rachvechein yitzu b'chush gadol, and he took away the money from them also. So the ask kasha, how could it's like the mefarshim are like, how could a Kadosh Baruch Hu punish the mitzrayim with an onesh aguf and then go ahead and take the money from them? So isn't that a problem of kimle v'dramine? So it could be that the mitzvah mechayev and dinah shemayim to pay Klai Yisrael for all the service that they had done. So even though it wasn't enforceable on Beis Din, but the Klai Yisrael were toe-faced. V'shala isha mishchent, they went ahead and grabbed the money themselves. So once they grab the money, then you can't take it away from them. So others say don anochi and dinah shemayim is different, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu can be done. Kimle v'dramine, a lot of razzle-dazzle shtickle terrors about that. So the contest that we gave the shiur last year was, there was an article in the New York Times several years ago that there was that apparently a group of Egyptian lawyers were bringing a case against the state of Israel. They were suing the state of Israel for the value of gold that 600,000 people could walk away with on their backs at the rate of gold 3,500 years ago. Based on the Pesuk Melchumash, they claim that the Jews stole all the Kli Chesed, the Kli Zav, and the Smolos, and they bring a court case against the Klal Yisrael to return the money. That was the mamash in the New York Times. So at the time, when I saw that article, so I gave a whole shiur about that, about what kind of a time was that. Because on the other hand, Klai Yisrael could have sued the Egyptian government for 210 years of slave labor. That also would have been quite an expensive ordeal. So anyway, whatever it was. So in the courts, they were fighting this out in Egypt. There's nothing else to do. They were fighting out about the Shaila. So I gave it, had a whole discussion about this, whether this was a claim in Beis and Shemal or not. At the end of the day, the case was dropped. The reason why the case was dropped, not because they realized the absurdity of the case, but the real reason why the case was dropped, apparently, it was written up later, was that, you know, the basic propaganda of the Arab world all the years has been is that, what are the Jews? Who do these guys come? What are they doing in Israel? They're a bunch of people who came from Eastern Europe, and they came and they don't belong in the Middle East. They have no connection here. So what are they doing here? So how can you go ahead and they claim, these guys are not the descendants of the ancient Israelites. They're a bunch of guys from Europe who came and usurping our land. So that if that's true, the Shittosim, how could you go ahead and sue the Israelis who are here now for events of 3,500 years ago? So they're not connected. There's no Shaychas. So they realize that to take this court case would undermine their entire argument against the existence of Klai Yisrael and Eretz Israel. So they realized the absurdity of it, so they dropped the case. That's what's in the papers. Anyway, whatever. And Bachshon, they lost the case anyway, and we could still keep the Klai Chesed and Klai Zav small, so we can find where they are. The real answer to it was that this was all Yosef's money. Yosef was the one who got it. Where did the Kli Chesed and Zav come to Mitzrayim from? So the Pesukim say in Sefer Bereishis that all the money came because of Yosef. So he was the one who raised all this money. So it was all his money. So Klai Yisrael were the rightful heirs to all the money that was taken out of Mitzrayim. Anyway, whatever, it's not for now. So get back to the story. So Avak Ribbis says Eina Yotze B'Dayarim, but Lechatchili is supposed to return. Let's say today Shemayim. If the other guy's Michael, then he's Michael. But under normal circumstances, you're supposed to return it. There are some situations that may arise where a person may be required to return Avak Ribbis. The whole reason why Avak Ribbis is, technically speaking, not Yotze B'Dayanim is going back to the svara that we said before, because the guy gave it to me Miratzo. He gave it to me willingly. So if the person gave it to me willingly, so in terms of Chayshim Mishpat, I don't really have a right to it. I only have a right to it because of the mitzvah V'Cheyach Yichayimach. So V'Cheyach Yichayimach doesn't apply to Avak Ribbis. That's the presentation that the Mefarshim say. Let's say the Lova gave the money to the Malva unwillingly. The Lova's screaming, I don't want to go. I don't want to give you this money. I never agreed to this. And the Malva goes in and takes it anyway. So that's Geneva. That's not Ribbis. Ribbis means when everybody agrees. Everyone signs a contract and the guy gives it over willingly. He's upset about it, but he realizes that he entered into this agreement. But if I go ahead and I take the money, Shalobarats on Haloves, and then that's not Ribbis. That's Geneva. So of course that's going to be Yotze B'Dayanim. He can go after me, he can go after my children. That's not Kibrav Amish. That's real Geneva. That's Cheshem Mishpat. So of course that's going to be enforceable. Even though we have differences between Ribbis Ketzutza, that's Yotze B'Dayanim, and Ribbis Avak Ribbis, which is not Yotze B'Dayanim, but still a Chatchili is supposed to return, there sometimes you have a situation of very low-level Ribbis Derabanan, which is not even Letzei Sidei Shemayim. So that's what we call Ribbis Mukdemis and Ribbis Mulcheres. We spoke about this earlier on in the Shiurim, that Avak Ribis is different from Ribis Katsutsa in the sense that it's not set into the contract, that it's some kind of a possibility that Ribis is going to develop, but it's not really Kavua into the contract itself. That's Avak Ribis. But at least the Avak Ribis is taking place in the context of the loan itself. The mission at the end of Ezer Neshach says sometimes you can have a situation where the Ribis really has nothing to do chronologically with the loan, in the sense that the loan is not even there yet. So I come to you and I say, listen, I'm planning in 6 months from now I'm going to need some money for my investments. So in 6 months from now I'm going to come and I'm going to borrow $10,000 from you. Here's a gift in advance. So that's what's called ribis mukdemis. I gave you the gift, I gave it a ribis, but there wasn't even a loan yet. Well, ribis mukheris is the opposite. I borrowed $10,000 from you last year, I paid back the loan already, and sure, I'm finished. And then I come to you and I give you this beautiful shalach manas that I never saw you before, I never gave you before. We're not so friendly before. I give you this beautiful shalach manas and I say to you, thank you so much, it was really nice of you to lend me that money last year. That's what's called ribis mukheris. So those things are prohibited. That's the Mishnah, the very last Mishnah in Ezer Neshech, says yesh ribis mukdemis, yesh ribis mukheris. Those things are prohibited. And we spoke about some of the guidelines. Does it have to be spelled out that's in exchange for the loan? What if it's a significant amount? An insignificant amount, is there a time limit? The guy lent me money 50 years ago, so it's still a problem with Ribis Mukderis. So we spoke a little bit about those guidelines in previous Europe. But in a situation where Ribis Mukderis and Mukheris were violated, so then the post can say you don't even have to return it, because even Lechatchila, because that's a lower level on the totem pole of Ribis. So not all Ribis Derabanans are the same. Ribis Derabanan, that's real bona fide Ribis Derabanan, although it's not in forcible in days, then the chetchila should be returned. Ribis mukdemis and mucheris, which are not really having to do with the loan proper, they're not at the time of the loan, are not only enforceable, but you wouldn't even have to return it, even the chetchila. So we're about to begin what's really going to be our last main topic in terms of ribis, and that's assuming that we have some kind of a deal that is a problem of ribis. Is there any way to get around this problem? So that's what we call the heter iska. So we're going to begin. We've alluded to heter iska many times. I'm going to try to discuss some of the details in terms of heter iska. So the term heter iska is a fairly new term. Heter iska doesn't appear in the Gemara. Some of the background of heter iska appears in the Gemara. It doesn't appear in the Gemara. It was really formulated just a couple of hundred years ago, around the time of Chiras Chametz. A couple of these things came into our lexicon in the last couple of hundred years. But the Yisod of Heter Iska does have its roots in the Gemara. And before we talk about the Heter Iska proper as it's practiced today, we probably won't even get to it today, let's just give a little bit of a background, just what the term Iska means all about, because that really is a sugya that appears in Bav Metzia in Ezer Neshech. Even though the main sugya happens not even to be in Ezer Neshech. The main sugya is really in the ninth parak, but it's alluded to in the parak about ribis as well. So there is a halachic concept called an iska. So an iska is like an asek, means some kind of an agreement, some kind of a partnership. Two people are going into some kind of an investment together. So what exactly does an iska mean? So usually what we think of an iska is that, for argument's sake, I got a lot of money and I want to invest in such and such a thing, but I don't have time to do the nitty-gritty. I'm not going to sit in the store and actually bake the pizzas. I'm not going to be involved in raising the sheep. I'm not going to be involved in whatever the particular business is. I'm the investing partner. Now, there's a guy who's very talented. He's very good at running pizza stores. He's very good at raising sheep. He's very good at doing whatever business that we're going to enter into. But Lamaise, he doesn't have any money. So, classic situation. So you have an investing partner and you have a managing partner. So you have two guys who are going to enter into some kind of a business deal together. So that's basically what's called an iska. That I give you money, I put the money up front, you're going to go use this money to whatever investment, whatever business profit you're going to make, and we're going to split the profit in some shape or form, whatever the terms of the iska are. So how exactly does the halacha view this? Before we get anywhere near ribis, how does the halacha view such a such an arrangement? When I give you money, I put money up for an investment, and you work on it, and then we split the profits in some degree. So we know that there are different models in halacha of I having money and giving you the money. So there's a model, the moshel of a malva and a lova. You can have a relationship of a person who's lending money, a person who's borrowing money. That's one type of relationship. You can have a different kind of relationship. That's a relationship of a pikadon. It means I have money. It totally, completely belongs to me. I'm not lending you the money. You're watching the money for me. I go on vacation. I want to leave your money. You put it in your safe. You're watching it for me. So that's a shomer. It's a mafkid shomer type of relationship. So those are two very, very different models. My nafkamina between the two, well, one very, very big nafkamina is who exactly is responsible for this money. If something goes wrong, or something goes right, so who makes the profits, who gets the loss on this type of a setup? So in the case of a malva lova, so milva lotzon, when I lend you money, so then you're totally in control of the money. You do whatever you want with the money. So And if you decide on your own to invest the money in your own business, nothing to do with me. I'm lending you money. I'm giving you $10,000. Do whatever you want. You want to buy a car. You want to put money for a down payment. You want to invest in your business. Buy a pizza store. Whatever you want. I'm giving you $10,000. So any money that you make out of the $10,000, all that profit is going to go to you. If you lose all the money, something happens to the investment. If something happens to the money, it's going to be your loss. So that's a classic relationship of a malva lova, that the lova is totally, completely in control of the money, but he's got to return the $10,000, obviously, whenever the loan is over. Mafkid and Shomer is totally different. Mafkid and Shomer, when I own money and I give it to you to watch, so that's Pashas Mishpatim. So the Torah says there are dinim. Ki yiten isha re'eh kesva kedim lishmar. So if you're a Shomer Chinam on the money, so then you have limited responsibility. So if you're Pesheya, if I give you, let's say, $10,000 to watch, and you leave it on the table and the door wide open, and somebody comes in and steals the money, so that's your responsibility. You're a Pesheya, even if you weren't getting paid for the work. If you're a Shomer Sachar, and you're getting paid for watching the money, so then your level of responsibility is a little bit higher. So then you have to be careful, not only not to be negligent, but even if it gets stolen, not through negligence, you're also going to be have to pay. If some onus happens, let's say, if I give you $10,000 to watch, and you put the money in a safe and everything, and then a tornado comes and blows the whole house away, so the money's gone, so that's an onus, and then as a shomer, you're not going to be responsible for that. If you were a lova, then you are responsible for that. A lova is responsible for everything. I don't care what happens to the money when I lend you the money. I know that June 1st, I'm expecting $10,000 back. It's your problem what happens to the money. So a shomer, a mafkid shomer relationship is very, very different from a malva lova relationship. The basic primary difference being that the lova is totally responsible for good and for bad, and the shomer is not really responsible, again, depending on what the agreement that they entered into. So how do we view an iska? How does Allah view such a situation where I enter into an agreement with you, I give you money, and you're gonna invest the money, you're going to work on this business, and I'm going to get some of the profits, and you're going to get some of the profits. Is that a malva-lova relationship? Or is that a mafkid-shoma relationship? So the Gemara says that it's split, that hai iska palga milva palga pikadon, the Gemara says in the ninth parakhav of Metziah, that we view an iska, every situation of an iska, is in a certain sense really half and half. Because if we're going to split the profits, let's say, assuming that the deal is we're going to split it 50-50. So if we're going to split it 50-50, what we're really saying is that 50% is a loan, and therefore you, as the managing partner, are entitled, as the borrower, as the lova, you are entitled to 50% of the profit, because you borrowed 50% of the money. So you are entitled to 50% of the profit. You also have to suffer 50% of the losses. I'm going to also have 50% of the profit and 50% of the losses, because it's a half pikadon as well. So any time if I give you money as a pikadon, if something happens to the money, so I'm the one who's going to take the loss. So that's what the Gemara says, that hai iska palga milva palga pikadon. Since normally people agree to go 50-50 in the business, so we view it, the halacha views it as such, 50% milva, 50% pikadon. In theory, the part... You could, in theory, let's say if it's not cash, if it's something else, if it's some goods or something, the goods could go up in value. So in theory, there could be a profit. So high iska palga milva palga bikadon. It doesn't have to be 50-50. The Gemara just says normal people enter into this. It could be 70-30, it could be 60-40, it could be 90-10, whatever agreement the two parties go into. But the bottom line is whatever the investing partner is going to make or lose is viewed by the halacha as a pikadon. Whatever the managing partner is going to make or lose is viewed by the halacha as a milva. So the Gemara says that this type of a relationship of iska is problematic. You know why it's problematic? Because since there's a milva, since there's a halva that's taking place, so now the halachas of ribis begin to kick in. Whenever there's a pikadon, there's no halachas of ribis. If I ask you to wash my car, that's not a milva, it's not a halva, so there's no ribis whatsoever. Or if you ask to borrow my car, to use the car, that's not a halva, that's a she'ela. But whenever I'm giving you money, I'm giving you some kind of goods that are not going to actually themselves be returned, so you're going to return something else in its place, that's a halva. So where's the ribis here exactly? I'm giving you the iska, and you're going to give me 50% of the profit. Well, the ribis is as follows. You're working for me for free, because you are working on part of my property. I'm giving you 50% that you're going to keep, so that's a halvah, and I'm retaining ownership on the other 50%, which is a pikadon, and you're doing the job. So you're working at the pizza store, you're slaving away, and you're making extra money for me. So at the end of the day, you're going to return me money that I didn't pay you to work for. So if I don't pay you to work for, you're working me for free. Why are you working me for free? Because I gave you a halvah. That's a problem. I'm lending you $1,000 and you're returning to me $1,000 plus a month's service of working on the pizza store, which is going to make me some money. So the Gemara says every iska is a problem. That's what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah Bava Metzia says every type of these relationships is by definition a built-in ribbis problem. So how do you get around this problem? So the Mishnah says a very simple way to get around this problem. Pay the guy for his services. Pay the guy for his work. So then he's no longer working for free. So then I'm lending you $1,000. Give me back $1,000. I'm working for you. I'm getting paid. So that's perfectly okay. How much do you have to pay him? So the Gemara says, you don't have to pay him such a tremendous amount. As long as you make a token, symbolic payment, so that's also good enough. As long as the payment is built into the agreement, so different people work for different amounts of money. So as long as it's clear, again, this is not ribbis derais anyway. The whole thing is only ribbis derabanan. So as long as you put some kind of a symbolic token as to how much you're paying him, that's okay. So that's the basic format of iska. So iska in the Gemara is a problem. It means every iska is problematic. And the Gemara says you have to solve the problem of iska with this kunz of paying the guy to work. So how does iska become a heter iska? So the term heter iska means as follows, that When I lend you $1,000, so rather than viewing this $1,000 as an outright loan, we're going to reframe it a little bit. We're going to restructure it a little bit. We're going to present it as an iska. We're going to present it as an opportunity for an investment. So rather than saying that I'm lending you $1,000 and you're going to return me $1,000 plus ribis, we'll turn it around a little bit and reformulate it. We'll call it an iska. I'm investing $1,000 into the business, and now half it becomes a milva, half it becomes a pikadon, and now we're going to have to see. Hopefully next week we'll have to see. So what happens? Now that some of the money comes back, so who makes the profit? When some of the money gets lost, who takes the losses? And who exactly gets paid? How do you set up such a deal not to run into this problem of iska gufa being a problem of a ribis? So this is at least the background. The institution of iska with the issue that Chazal raised about every iska by definition being ribis, this becomes the background for the heter iska that's practiced today. So next week, the following week, we'll try to work out the details how an heter iska actually plays out.